Hey folks, welcome back. This is Coach Porrick from the Humble Coach Podcast. So folks, in today's episode, I'm joined by a friend of mine from back in the day. A few years ago, I met him and we worked alongside each other for a little while. His name is Brendan Egan. He's a great strength and conditioning coach who's had really good success with a number of different high-level teams and high-level sport athletes in recent times. And hopefully you guys will enjoy the chat we had today. We also did an Instagram live, so I can tell that it's a bit impromptu and a bit messy, but it is what it is, and hope everybody's staying safe out there, and this takes your mind off things for a little while, and you get some value out of it. Enjoy, folks. Right, so we'll go with this and see how it goes, Brent. All right, well, first of all, folks, this is Park from the Humble Coach Podcast. I suppose this is a bit mad. You're welcome back. I haven't done one in ages. I did a bit of a comeback one, then they didn't fucking come back. So wasn't the ideal scenario. We're back now. Folks, I'm joined by, as you can tell there, on Instagram Live anyways, Brendan Egan. Brendan, thanks for joining me, dude.
Hey, good to be here.
Good stuff. I haven't seen you in ages. At a distance, exactly. It's important to fucking to keep the old distance for now, at least. Come here. So I haven't seen you in ages, and you've been fairly busy with different things. Geez, over the last number of years, anyways. I haven't seen it. I'd say the last time I saw you was about a year ago, maybe more, probably two.
It's two anyway.
Mental. All right. So if you could give the crew a bit of a background on yourself, it'd be great. Even just a kind of quick enough one to see what the story is, and then we can dig in, I suppose, into more particular areas that you've been working on in the last number of years, individually, and the kind of later questions. So if you give us a shout about that, it'd be great.
Cool. So like, I suppose look, sport was always a big part of my life, albeit a pretty amateur level for me anyway. But like, I've always played hurling, I played a bit of rugby, played a bit of soccer, played a bit of Gaelic football through my secondary school years and whatnot. Then I suppose when I left, when I don't leave in certain left school, I didn't know where I wanted to go, didn't know what I wanted to do. I took a year out, I was working in a factory, decided, right, this isn't probably for me. And I just put it down on my form, sports strength and conditioning. So I accepted it, I got offered it, I accepted it, and I didn't really know what it was going to be, what it would entail, and I just jumped straight into it. So that was down in LIT in Thurles at the time, and they were joined with Santa College that time, so it kind of a mix of both. And that was back 2012, I was there for kind of 4 years. So then kind of, I suppose, 2015, I finished there in 2016, but going back to 2015, I was starting coaching maybe with some teams, so I kind of did a little bit of around Newcastle, did some circuit training and some really kind of, wasn't very strength conditioning stuff at the time, but it was coaching.
Yeah.
Then I got involved through that, I got involved with the Galway Miners, kind of halfway through their season that year, just shadowing and watching their sessions and what they were doing and whatnot. So I kind of got in the loop that way. I got to meet Tom French. And then in 2016, in my final year, Tom was actually with the senior hurlers at that time. And he asked me would I get involved by giving them a hand out, I suppose, as an assistant or an intern or whatever.
Yeah.
Through like being involved with the senior hurlers at that time was something that I kind of always would have loved to. I knew I was never going to be involved as a player. Pretty early, but anyway, to be involved was great. So got involved that year. Great. If you look at it, was a great year. Kind of, yeah. I got to all Ireland semi-final. I learned loads. Made some great friends. Made some great experiences through it. And like that led on to then when I finished. When I finished college and I got my degree, led on to a job with Tom. I think I got to work with Tom for probably 2 years. I worked with them until about kind of January or February 2018.
Yeah.
So it was kind of two years in total. And I know I was out in your place in French Molly for a while.
Yeah, it was deep.
That's our connection, I suppose.
Good.
But look, I got got some loads of hands-on coaching experience there, loads. All different kind of age groups, which is general fitness, all the way up to kind of top-level athletes in their sport, you know. I started working with Kieran Malay through there, Kieran Boxer, so that was September 16th, so that's a while back now, 3.5 years, I suppose. Through that time, then I got involved with the Galway Under 21 hurlers for the 2017 season, still on them for 2018 season. After the 2018 season, then I got the opportunity to go into America on an internship, which was great. Massive learning experience. Someplace different. I had no traveling done. I think the last time I was out of the country before that was the school tour to Salou in 2009. So it was 9 years of being on this island. So it was great experience. Came back from there and got involved with Lucas Kirstenstein, with the Galway seniors again as an assistant, helping him out. And I was asked to come on board as strength coach for Galway minors that year. So it was 2019, that was just last season. This year I've kind of taken a bit of a step back from all that. I've been involved with Galway seniors from 2015 all the way up to the end of last season. Great experience. Multiple age groups all the way from minor, kind of coaching 15, 16, 17 year olds all the way up to senior athletes. And then this year I kind of took a step back from that. I'm still involved with a couple of clubs. With my own bit of online coaching at the moment, but I got back into a research master's there at the moment. So I'm going to go back into the academic side, go back into my studies. I feel probably something I'd like to add on to. Cool. What it means. So yeah, that's it.
Not too bad. So what are you doing the research master's in at the minute, Brent? I guess.
We're looking to the demands of kind of intercounty hurling. It's back down in LAT in Tipperary. Under Damien Young. So Damien has a couple of research out there in kind of hurling, the physical demands of hurling at the moment. So trying to delve a bit more in depth into that and build on what Damien has published, I suppose, already here.
Savage. So that's, I suppose, and having known you from French Magnolia, right, and you would have been working along with us a little bit, and a couple of things, I suppose, particularly resonate with me when it comes to working alongside yourself. It's always, you're always very open to, I suppose, to working with lots of different types of people and athletes, and especially with your experience with Tom and stuff like that. You'd have no choice but to be kind of getting stuck in with loads of different age groups, loads of different ability levels. And again, I think I'm aware of this as well. When you go from, if you work with kids or you work with teenagers and adults, the different levels you have to have, the different attitude you have to have nearly to the different age groups is mad. But also the different, I suppose, expectations that would be upon each of the types of groups, or at least your own kind of coaching ability towards them. But you mentioned the Citadel there, and you mentioned the lots of different hurling teams. You mentioned boxing with Kieran Malloy, and then there's some rugby players and things like this. So there hasn't been you haven't been stuck in the one particular sport. So I suppose we'll look at Kieran first. So you've been with him for quite a while as one of his main coaches. Could you talk a little bit about how you got started with him, and then also what you found over the last number of years with him? Have you found obviously he's a phenomenally gifted boxer, and I met him a couple of times just to kind of chat to him, not any big kind of deal or anything like that, but I remember distinctly hearing about him years before you got involved with him as an underage boxer from my dad. And he would have been, as one of the lads in our club, was actually would have been kind of, I suppose, a similar kind of level to him, but just got into kind of some more challenging fights and stuff like that, had a couple of different directional issues going on. So would have known about him years back. Would you talk a little bit about your experience with him and how you got started with him, and how you've been able to kind of work along with him and develop a good relationship with him?
Yeah, so look, I suppose relationship, the last word you mentioned there, like that's massively important. I got started back with him in I think it was like October 16. Mm-hmm. So it was just after starting working in Tom's mm-hmm. gym in Oranmore. And himself and his dad rocked in. They were kind of, they seen us advertising through Facebook as kind of more athlete-centered, mm-hmm. I suppose, coaching, rather than just your general fitness or whatnot. So they rocked in. I remember kind of myself and Tom came in on his own with his dad the first day, and myself and Tom took him left in the first session. I was interested, obviously. Lucas, he was a high level boxer, something I'd never worked with before. Mm-hmm. So Tom kind of said in pretty quickly, Lucas, you take on him, you work with him. He's your client, he's your athlete to work with. So I suppose, like, it was much more of a, how would you say it? Like, a lot of the principles are still the same as with other athletes. Mm-hmm. So building the basics was really important. And, like, I didn't want to go straight into too much of, you know, boxing specific stuff off the bat, because he had very little training age, mm-hmm. you know. Of what I knew, he'd done a little bit of work with some other guy, but it was kind of sporadic. I remember Anthony Day would have done in the Institute in Dublin, mm-hmm. because he was only up there different periods of the year, would have been on and off. So the only real training age he had was his boxing training age, mm-hmm. And his skill training age.
Yeah.
So it was really starting off with the basics there. One thing that kind of, I built a pretty decent relationship with him pretty quick, mm-hmm. and that was massive, you know, to build that trust, for him to believe in what I was trying to do and the process, that it was going to take time and it wasn't something that I wanted to rush, you know. That trust was massive.
How old was Kieran at the time? Hmm? How old was Kieran at the time?
Oh, Kieran was, what did you say, he was 21 now, so that was 2016, he was
16, 17. Yeah.
Yeah, so it, like, I only had a really experience of working with kind of more team based mm-hmm. athletes, yeah. you know, and it's a different perspective, or it's different.
Completely.
It's different to the individual, you know. Mm-hmm. At that level, then, like, there's so much expectation. Like, if he doesn't perform, you know, it's him rather than maybe other aspects of the team, you know. Mm-hmm. So it can be a lonely place, and building that relationship was a big part of it, you know. Mm-hmm. I suppose now he'd be as much of a friend as a client I'm coaching, or an athlete I'm coaching, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that's really important, that it's a lone, like, boxing can be a lonely sport.
Very much.
You know, like, Kieran left school after junior start to pursue the career of boxing. So his social interaction isn't as much. He's up in Dublin with other boxers during the week. When he comes over the weekend, he has his family and a few close friends, but you know, like, me being there and being able to be an outlet for him if he's issues or anything like that, that was something that I wanted to build pretty quick, and I think we got that. In regards to kind of stuff that I would have done with him, like, again, we started off pretty basic, as I said. Got his strength levels up, relative mm-hmm. strength, all that up. And, like, we still work on the basics. You know, like, look, we have done some of the basic stuff, rich contrast and all that, but we would have done that when we had a good training base, you know.
Yeah, I suppose with the likes of him, so he's an interesting one, I think, because he has performed extremely well in the last number of years, and has won a lot of very high level fights and very challenging ones. But I haven't seen him training a little bit in Tom's place and with yourself. He has a very much a natural talent for the sport, but. Obviously, like you mentioned as well, though, that the training age was quite low. Well, I suppose a gym training age, or at least a strength training age, was quite low. And that would just take a bit of time to build. But the simple stuff, I suppose, to try and get that into, I suppose everyone hears about regardless of what sport you're doing. Okay, do the simple stuff correctly and do the simple stuff regularly, and you'll be in really, really good nick. Which is exactly it. But you also mentioned then playing around with some French contrast, playing around with some triphasic. How did you integrate that in? And did you find much success with certain parts of that, or were there some drawbacks purely because of his potentially lower training age, depending on the timing, I suppose, of it? Could you talk a little bit about that, Brian?
Yeah, so like we didn't kind of really introduce much of that stuff until we had, you know, 2x body weight, expert squat and whatnot, until his relative levels were pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't rush into it. Sometimes I do rush into, I have rushed into stuff in the past, you know, different training. What was in the limelight and what looked good at the time.
Yeah.
We didn't do that with Kieran. So yeah, like come back to that. It's the boxing season is pretty. It's easier to implement some of that kind of stuff, you know, because you're building. You might have 4 or 5 months to build to a fight. At the start, that may be a great time to introduce your triphasic block, you know.
Yeah.
Compared to in team sports, where you know you've games, you may have league, you've club games, you've like with the minors there, like last year we club games, we school games,
yes,
we county games. Mm-hmm. You know, there was tri games. So trying to fit in something like that, something like the triphasic or the French contrast would have been really, really, really hard. Obviously, the guys didn't have the training age, but like after a year or whatnot of doing the basics, you start to see less of an improvement or less of performance.
Yeah.
And it's the same with everything. You see it in everything you do.
Yeah.
I suppose in CrossFit, like, you know, if you don't change it, you're not gonna improve. Like, so
yeah.
So straight away doing the triphasic, when we've done that, you know, everything, all these numbers started kind of go back up again very quick. So
And have you, I suppose, he obviously had lots of trust in you there for that, and it takes that time to build the trust so that you could try things like that. But I suppose would he have been looking at certain things and going, okay, I might want to do a bit more of this, or I don't know his dad as also, but I know I've heard of his dad's a very, very good coach, and just a good lad. But he would have, I suppose, a very good awareness of the patience needed to make good progress and the building phase over a number of years, especially if someone like Kieran took and finished after junior cert to really pursue it as a career. It's a very, very significant, serious situation. So I think it makes a big difference when you have a good support team like that, and also someone like yourself who is very conscientious of maybe adding some stuff in, but also doing it on a very good level of, look, we put in a lot of basic groundwork to begin with, and then we can play with some different pieces that might work for you, and some of them that will work would be great. And I suppose that's one of the interesting things when you look at buy-in, and we'll talk a little bit more about this in actually just a second, but we'll move away from Kieran if we can. So you spent a bit of time in the States, when was that, 2 years ago? Last year? 2 years?
18 months ago.
18 months ago, odd.
September.
Mm-hmm.
October, November
of 18. Nice. Yeah. And so you were at the Citadel Military College in South Carolina. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you got into that? You were hanging out with some big names in the S&C to get there and a whole lot. Just schmoozing up a storm, like it.
Kind of going back to the relationships. It was down to relationships, I think, was the reason that I got that, you know. I was at Play, you know, the Play, PLA, the crew over in the States. So they had one of the performance labs in Belfast back in summer of 2017. And I remember, even going back before that, I remember the NSCA had a conference in St. Anthony College down in LIT, and I was part of a little society we go in the college. I can't even remember the name of it. It was a student strength and conditioning society.
Yeah.
But St. Anthony College asked us to get involved maybe in the organization of the conference at that time. And I remember Liam Hennessy saying that time, if you see any of the speakers walk up and down the hallway, make sure to stop them and talk to them. They may remember you.
Yeah.
But he said it's building the relationship, it's building that contact, and that was really, really important. And it's something I've always remembered was when Liam told that in a little meeting, that's 2015. And then up at the Play Lab in Belfast, I remember at the end of it, Ron McKeefrey, he was the kind of, I don't know, the CEO or was he the main guy in Play at the time. But he was talking at it, and after the conference, it was up in Black Box in Belfast. I went up to him and just got chatting to him, and I said, look at it, I'm an over, I'd love to go to America, do an internship, get some experience. And he gave Cormac, a friend of mine, Cormac Ward, was with me at the time, he gave Cormac his email, and Cormac shot him an email. I ended up shooting him an email about a year later, and I was like, I had a picture with him, and I sent him the picture with a selfie, and I sent him that, and I said, hey, I was talking to you at the Play Lab last year, and he said, yeah, he said, I remember you. I said, look, I'd love to go to America, now's the time. So he actually linked me up with about 12 different college programs in America, so some pretty big, like Notre Dame and all that. And he obviously linked me up with Mike and Donnell down at the Citadel. So we just sent Mike an email, Mike Morgan, he was the internship director at the time, sent Mike an email, and he got back to me at a few interviews, and I got the position. Went over there, it was, but like, that's what I'm saying, like, kind of, only for those relationships, it would have been very hard to get that. To get that position, and I think it's really, really important building those relationships, even if there's someone that you don't really like a whole lot, keep the relationship pretty good with them, you know.
You might
need them with something. So look, going to America for 3 months, not knowing anyone, I didn't know anyone over there. It was a military college, I didn't really have a clue what to expect. And yeah, it was something different. I hadn't been out of the country, as I said, for what, 9 years. So I arrived over there, and I thought, like, do you read so many things about internships in America, and like folding towels and washing floors and cleaning our locker rooms and whatnot. I said, oh god, here we go, like, this is going to be the first month of it, you know. And I went over there, and I think my first day I just watched, I just shadowed. They were doing a Sunday workout after a football game on a Saturday. I just watched, and then the next day they asked me would I jump in and coach one of their sets or one of their supersets or whatever. Would I explain it and break it down and go through coaching fights? So I remember I was flying through it, and kind of my West of Ireland accent, a lot of them didn't, this was down South America, you know, they didn't really understand. So pretty quickly I realized that, look, I'm going to change the way I coach. Not the way I coach, but even projection of voice and how I'm trying to get the message across, across that. What was your initial question again?
No, so I suppose when it looks at, when we're talking about Kieran and the, I suppose the support team that you would have had and you would have built with him, and the trust of trying different things, that probably built a little bit more confidence in yourself to chance your arm and kind of go, okay, look, I need to push on a little bit more and try a few different things, but also try and really enhance your knowledge. Because I, like, having worked with you, you're a very good coach, and you're very detailed about your coaching, but you're also quite a steady one, rather than getting into mad detail and then kind of going, oh Jesus, what the hell is this like? So you're quite good at that, but I could tell that you'd be kind of one of those ones, because you have such an interest in sport, and I suppose high level sport, and performance oriented sport, that you can that would have been a great next step for you to go to the Citadel and to really find out, okay, what is the actual story here? And I know you've probably said before that you had a really good support team over there. They obviously were playing hardball a bit here and there, but that's what an intern has to deal with. But I suppose my main question with the likes of that would be, when you're over there, what did you find was the biggest difference? Obviously there's facility differences and there's professionalism, mentality differences and things like that. But Was there any big takeaways you would have had that, like, would have really defined your time over there and would have been like, okay, that sticks with me now very hard when I come back to Ireland? Is there any two or three kind of big ones that you would have taken back there then that would have surprised you a little bit?
Yeah, like, I suppose, like, going to America, as you said, look at the group, the coaches were really good. Donnell, Mike, Jack, Steve, and even the other intern, Pablo, like, they were all very accommodating. Mm-hmm. They wanted me to get better. You know, they didn't want it to be an internship where they got everything they could out of me and I got nothing out of them.
Yeah.
They wanted it a both way, a two-way kind of a thing that mm-hmm. I was getting as much out of them as they were getting out of me, you know.
Yeah.
And I suppose, look at it, it's a lower division college.
Yeah.
So it's kind of bottom of that Division One.
Yeah.
So they don't obviously have the money that kind of your whatever teams have, mm-hmm. you know, your Alabamas and whatnot. So
yeah.
They didn't have the money to pay five coaches. So obviously they needed me to be able to
step in, exactly, and help. Mm-hmm.
Step in and help them out as well.
Very much.
What did I take away from it? Look, there was loads. Like, we had weekly discussions every Monday. Mm-hmm. Every Monday we do kind of a 2-hour roundtable talk mm-hmm. on different things, and like a lot. There was some really good stuff. You know, when you're a coach and you talk with another group of coaches, mm-hmm. it's nearly all about coaching methods and how you do this and mm-hmm. building relationships and whatnot. But stuff over there, like, we talk a lot about, like, career development and career choices, but in as, like, setting up your pension, stuff like that. That maybe in when you get to 45 and you have a family, that maybe coaching a group of athletes mm-hmm. every evening and you're gone till back in Ireland, especially within GAA or whatever, mm-hmm. you're gone till 10 o'clock every, that may not be something that
you want to work with,
that
exactly.
That would work for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if kids are in school all day and you come home, and then you're coaching all, they come home, you're coaching all evening,
yeah.
when do you want to see them, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's like, that was something that really got me kind of thinking. Back at that time, so being able to now, while you're a coach or while you're young, being able to mm-hmm. set up something that when you get to that age that you can maybe transfer into or whatnot, you know,
yeah.
Be it, I don't know, whatever, lecturing or
mm-hmm.
online coaching or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like another one over that kind of takeaway from over there was, I was going over and I was expecting technology.
Yeah.
You know, I was expecting the best of everything.
The whole lot.
And I was like,
yeah, force plates, giving it loads, all of the bits and pieces.
Yeah, and I got over there and I had a better jump mat here than what they had, you know?
Yeah.
And that kind of really resonated with me that,
mm-hmm.
look, at, you can have all the technology in the world, if you're not able to coach a bunch of athletes,
yeah.
And mm-hmm. a bunch of people, they're not athletes, if you're not able to connect with the people and connect,
mm-hmm.
build a relationship, you can have the best program in the world.
Yeah.
You hear this all the time. Mm-hmm. You can have the best program in the world. If you're not able to connect with athletes and they don't trust you,
no chance.
Or connect with them as people,
yeah.
that program's always right. So you can
yeah.
have the worst program in the world. If you have a good relationship, it'll work better than that better program.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So like that was something that was massive. Like, you know, because they had such, all the coaches had such relationships
mm-hmm.
and such buy-in from the athletes. Like, they went to, we went over to Alabama for our final game of the year, and like Alabama
series game
beaten that year. They were winning every game. They were number one in America at the time in college football, and they were winning every game at halftime. Playing the Citadel, which were like the worst team they played all year on paper. The Citadel were drawn with them at halftime. So, you know, you don't need
yeah.
you don't need the technology, you don't need
no.
you don't need the big budget to get
together.
So look, at that was kind of, they were my two main takeaways, and they're not
yeah.
even, they're not even coaching methods, they're not even,
no, and
know,
I think
practices, they're,
yeah, very much, and that's exactly it, like, as in, it's if, especially if you don't need the, if you don't, well, if you don't first of all have the monetary situation to get a lot of these this equipment and things like that, no matter what happens, then immediately you need to start looking at, okay, well, how can I maximize my team? How can I maximize the team, the support team around me? Like, even the way you're talking about that, I like went to the DCU coaching masterclass there recently in in Dublin, and Stuart Lancaster was talking at it, and loads of different people, was really, really excellent. But Lancaster is one I've watched for a long, long time, and he's really interesting because he spoke about the meetings that they have in Leinster, and he said every Monday they have a meeting, but not with like just the first team, with the entire team, so all of the players and all of the support teams, no matter what. So the entire, see, fucking 50 to 100 odd people tipping around in this meeting of like, okay, what went right, what went wrong, what's the story here? And then they have another meeting on Wednesday going, okay, do you remember what happened on Monday? What did you take from Monday? So the meetings are meetings, but more about, okay, what actually worked and what wasn't. So really, really getting to the root of the problem, if there was any issues going on. And I think when it comes to places like that, if they are kind of on a lower budget and they may not have all the equipment to play with, then they really have to focus on the relationships and on, okay, do you know what? We have to find out what our strengths are here as much as possible. The underdog mentality, just getting someone like yourself, having good recruitment practices, things like that. Obviously, you said that the other guys were really good coaches and very savvy coaches. But it takes a bit of cojones to try and allow someone like you in and go, okay, look, second day, in you go coaching, get stuck in, don't be hanging around, kind of waiting, you know. Whereas some other places, higher budget facilities or budget teams might turn around and go, okay, look, do you know what? Head down to there to the showers, and we'll tidy up that a bit, and you'll spend a bit of time here, and you know, we let our superstar coaches do all their business for the next couple of months, and then you might get a look in for a minute or two, but you get out the door. Yeah. And that's exactly what happens, like, you know.
I remember like when we went over to Alabama, we went over the night before, mm-hmm. and went for a pint, like,
yeah.
The night before the game, mm-hmm. and just a couple of coaches, and we met one of the interns that was actually interning in Alabama, their football mm-hmm. program, and okay. he was like one of 17 interns that
Jesus
they had.
Christ. Wow. Yeah,
so they have their 5 head coaches,
yeah.
and their 17 interns then for data collection and whatnot.
Oh my God.
So kind of, that gives you a bit of perspective of right. the size and the,
yeah.
of what they're working with.
Completely.
But he was kind of saying to me, like we were talking and discussing our internship positions, and
yeah.
he said to me, it sounds like you're getting more of yours than I'm getting all of mine.
Yeah.
You know, and I definitely think, you know, that was
makes a huge difference to it. Was, yeah.
I mean, even going back to that, like culture is really important. Like you had you and Paul on the show there a while back.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And like, I was talking to him a few weeks ago. We discussed like the culture and like having the best methods and as we said before, having the best program is great. But you have to have, number one is your culture and your buy-in and your trust and all of that.
Yes, very much. It's a huge, huge thing. Like, and I suppose that's one of the big things we'll talk about a little bit about now is like, I suppose as a coach, we all need patience. We also need a good amount of self-awareness and we need about a certain amount of, I suppose just humbleness to an extent to kind of explore, okay, what could have happened potentially with someone like yourself. You went in with the senior team or you're with such and such and you're like, right, we're kicking ass here, I'm getting like Johnny Big, you know, and giving it loads. But one of the first things immediately you would have done would be, okay, look, I need to actually get more experience on this, and I know I'm not not that you weren't a good coach, but you know that to make the next step and to really to build that consistency in progress with the teams you are working with, you need to spend a little more time tidying up your own abilities and your own practices and gaining sometimes potentially a reinforcement of your own beliefs and values of like, okay, this is actually how it does work in the highest level in college football. Okay, this is what we need to bring over here. And it wasn't possibly a million miles away from what you were doing, but I think even that reinforcement of our own beliefs can make a huge difference to when you go and working with the likes of the minor team or the under 21 team now or different players and stuff. Can you talk a little bit about what level, how the internship and even, I suppose, working with a high level team, like a senior team, and then going back to the, not necessarily a lesser team, but like a possibly more interesting team to work with, the minors and even the under 21s in recent times. Can you talk a little bit about the patience needed for some of that, because that kind of age group were quite challenging, Not that the older guys wouldn't either, but like that age group might be kind of interesting. They'd be very eager to look at moving on to the senior team, or they'd be very eager to go, do you know what, I'm just enjoying life here, or whatever it is, or I have all of this leaving cert stress and all these other bits and pieces going on. Can you talk a little bit about what kind of level of patience you might have needed, or differences to your approach you might have needed with that kind of age group in the last while?
Yeah, look, patience is massive. And I think if you're able to display a good kind of level of patience and like not be rushed, mm-hmm. that'll reflect too in the athletes. You know, if you're on a process or whatever to get to a certain stage, mm-hmm. and the athletes can see that and you're not rushing it, then they won't rush it either, you know. Like even on that, I remember, like, look at, you're always learning.
Yeah.
You're always learning as a coach, mm-hmm. and like I've been kind of involved, say 2012 I started college, so mm-hmm. I've been involved with like strength and conditioning and whatnot for the last 8 years now. Mm-hmm. And like it's only recently that I've even the importance of breathing.
Mm.
It's only recently I've learned that, you know, so
yeah.
Like look, I'm still far off the finished product. I'm never yeah. going to be the finished product. Mm. I think when you are the finished product, that's when you're finished. You know?
You're screwed, yeah, exactly.
But yeah, like look at it, like go back to the under 21s in 2018. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So like triphasic was kind of something that I was really big into at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those guys, I had them for 2017 season, so mm-hmm. I had a full kind of year of training done.
Yeah.
Some of them were only after starting in January.
Mm.
And I remember triphasic was pretty big at the time, was something that I wanted to implement with them.
Yeah.
And we did. Mm. And we actually had a good few guys breaking down, you know, breaking down injury wise,
yeah.
kind of missing a week, missing 2 weeks. And look at a week, like if you miss a week in any team sport,
mm-hmm.
especially at under 21, when you're trying to make a name for yourself, like missing a week is massive, you know.
Huge.
Like availability is the best ability, as they say. And like I probably, the guys that I had the year before, none of them broke down.
Mm.
They all got through that okay.
Yeah.
The guys that started maybe in January, and this was April, May, mm. so they only had a couple of months training age.
Yeah.
We put them into that. Like, that was impatience on my part.
Yeah.
And maybe proper structure. Like I couldn't let the guys that are the training age do it.
Yeah.
Do it, but. Like that patience is really important, and the patience and trust in your process is, as you said, is massive. But
yeah.
even like patience from trying to build the volume with the coaching staff is another big thing, you
yeah.
know, especially in GAA.
Mm.
Now, maybe recently not as much because people are starting to realize maybe the importance of strength and conditioning.
Yeah.
And strength and conditioning is important, but it's only a supplement to your sport training and your skill training.
Mm-hmm.
That's always
yeah.
I think if your strength and conditioning starts to come before your athletic development starts to come before your skill training, well, then
yeah.
it's another mistake.
Yeah.
You know, that's mm-hmm. you're gonna lose the battle there.
Yeah.
But like you learn, you know, it's like you learn patience over time because
you've no choice in the matter.
Take a full season for a coach or manager to actually
yeah.
buy into what you're trying to do.
Oh, completely.
Like,
yeah, very much. I think that's a good caveat into the next one. So, talking a little bit, I suppose we get into more kind of nitty gritty now. And obviously with sports kind of on the kibosh for now, and we're all kind of going All Ireland Gold and living the dream and doing all our lovely skill challenges out the back garden, and we're all working on our bits and pieces. It's good. So we can get a bit of work done. But it does put an interesting kind of spin to the S&C. Everyone's best laid plans for their lovely S&C program for the season and this periodization, this. Not that it's all gone, but a lot of it is going to be, okay, geez, I'm under a bit of pressure here because I don't have this particular facility to use. I don't have all of these things to use. So that's one interesting one, I suppose. Could you talk a little bit about, just in general, the conditioning piece of the strength and conditioning? So we obviously with something like triphasic, you're looking at building good consistent strength and sustainable strength. But obviously with this kind of time of year, it's probably would have been on the back end of a lot of theoretically heavy running sessions, or at least a lot of building of conditioning in a lot of team sports. You talk about some of the stuff that you have found really, really helpful, and also some of the stuff that you see out there that's probably like, not really a big fan of that. Like the likes of triphasic, for example, like you mentioned, it's a hugely helpful protocol, but you do have to have a bit of a background to really make it work very well for the particular athlete, and they have to have a good grounding. And if they don't, yeah, then you're leaving yourself a little bit kind of caught. But the ones that do have a good grounding can make good progress. For something like general conditioning, though, something like Maz running, something like tempo run, something like generally getting in and doing 5Ks all the time now, you'll have a mixed bag of different ways of working it. What would your favorite ways of building conditioning be in the likes of a team sport, for example? You could.
Yeah, look, like in a team sport, you have access to the players maybe 3-4 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, especially at amateur level in GA. And even at like top level GA, you know, in a training session, like even like you look at the seniors there, like last year, like Luke's may have, you know, 12, 15 minutes for warm up, and he may have 12, 15 minutes for conditioning at the end. Yeah. You know, so you may have 30 minutes 3 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, so what you do in those kind of in those time slots is really, really important. I think like Kerr William Platt, you know, will be strength. Like he talks a lot about developing what they're not developing in the sport. So it's more training.
Yeah.
So you work down kind of your energy systems into your aerobic, like lytic and alactic, three different energy systems. Like most hurling drills that we do will train the glycolytic energy system pretty good. You know, they'd be kind of 50 seconds a minute, you know, maybe a little bit longer. High intensity, you know, effort. Rarely do we do in sport training, do we do like aerobic work.
Yeah.
Rarely do we do maybe alactic work or true alactic work, where you do your high intensity effort and you get your break.
Yeah.
Is it like if you do your 6, 7, 8 second elastic effort and you have to do one again in 15 seconds, you're not really going to develop that energy system. That's more kind of glycolytic work. What we would have done, like what I'm a big believer of, and I know I took it, kind of would have taken it from Kerr, a rugby strength coach, is tempo runs.
Yeah.
And I think they're really, really good bang for your buck kind of exercise or method. Like you can get so much work in kind of 15, 16 minutes, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like when you do your kind of whatever 17, 18, 19, 20 second tempo run followed by your 40 second rest or whatever, you're remaining predominantly aerobic because of the long rest period. So you're developing aerobic energy system for your 15, 16, 17 minutes.
Yeah.
It's something that they're probably not going to get in training.
No.
And what does that do? That helps them recover a lot more between efforts, you know, it allows their other systems to work that bit better from a rugby standpoint. Also, you're getting high speed running.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting, like, if you do 12, 13, 14, 100 meter efforts, you're probably getting 1K of high speed running.
Yeah.
So you're getting that exposure to high speed running. So that when you go into the game and you do a load of that in the game, your hamstrings aren't saying, Jesus, I've never seen this before.
Yeah.
You know, you're conditioning your hamstrings to that high speed run. So that's really important. That's kind of something that I'd always use, and would be a kind of big favourite of mine. Even last year with the minors, and even the year before with the under 21s, like we won the kind of Leinster final after extra time, and I think we'd only one guy got a cramp. Now, look, that wasn't all because of the condition we'd done.
But part of it would have been.
I think they'd find six cramps that time. You know, that's a lot of doubt to make the work that Mike Day done. Mike Day was on your
podcast.
And Maeve Gackman, she stepped in and helped us out a little bit that day. So look, a lot of it is down to that and their nutrition and hydration strategies. But it definitely did help them allow to perform for the full time, you know, without that.
I think that's quite an interesting one. I think a lot of the time, I suppose, players anyways, potentially, and lots of other coaches, and from the outside, lots of fans of this particular sport or onlookers would consider strength and conditioning as, right, it has to be gym work and it has to be hard running or has to be sprints or has to be loads of technical bits and pieces and I have to learn certain lifts and this kind of crack and I have to be okay, I have to be doing my two or three heavy gym sessions and so on. But for me, I suppose I look at it and we look at it very differently sometimes as coaches, unbeknownst to ourselves. But someone like the strength you looked at, we even talk about there, the strength alone is building general strength and robustness so that you can actually perform your sport correctly and stay as healthy as possible. But I think a lot of the time the word conditioning gets kind of taken into, okay, it has to be very much engine-based as much as possible. But like you mentioned there, it could be a case of that level of the conditioning of a particular part of the body, the hamstrings, lower body, to really be able to be resilient for a lot of actual volume is just as important. I think sometimes that's where players can look at going, okay, it's conditioning, right? I'm just going to run like, I'm just going to run all the time. And you're like, well, not exactly. If I'm doing lots and lots of posterior work, lots of, there's a reason that so many GA players do and field sport athletes do so much RDLs, so much basic core work, so much basic lateral work, like in and jumping and landing work. Like that's all conditioning the actual body into being resilient in particular movement patterns rather than just, okay, well, I'm just going to build my engine so I can run more. And you're like, well, that's where I suppose it's interesting to get that kind of point through to people, because a lot of the time it can get looked at as, right, S&C is just gym work. And you're like, well, no, S&C actually is, it should be, like you mentioned at the very start, it should be a supplement to your actual sport. So you're trying to find out where you're weak and work on that so that, like, if someone's really, really good, if they're an excellent sprinter, then that's fine. But if you notice that they are only able to sprint, like they never get back to the midfield, never mind to the half forward line, and they're only able to live in the corner forward line, in this kind of day and age, they're going to be screwed. They have no chance, you know? So I think that's kind of interesting to get that viewpoint on very much.
Yeah, and I look at, like, with the hurling drills, like, you can change the hurling drills to target your energy systems that bit better, you know?
Yeah.
The more of a link that you have with the hurling coach, the better, like, and even, like, you can overdo it as well on your high-speed running, you know?
Oh, very much.
Some hurling drills may be structured in a way that we're getting loads of kind of high-speed meters here, and if I go and do my tempos then on top of that, well, then we're looking for, like, you're going to see a massive spike in kind of high-speed running, and it mightn't happen that day, it mightn't happen the following day, but, like, maybe down the line, your injury happened from that spike that happened a couple of days ago, you know?
Yeah.
So being able to link in and that relationship with the skills coach is kind of really important, not being on the same
wavelength. Yeah, very much. And I think, like you mentioned about Mike and Maeve and stuff like that, and you would have seen it, I'm sure, in the Citadel, the good quality level of team support you can get in the background team makes a huge, huge difference to the actual ability of the athletes. But a lot of it comes down to, and this is where I suppose looking at, and there's another lad, Shane, that you would have worked at as one of the rugby players. I think he plays with Leinster now. And someone like him, like those kind of, he'd be an interesting one. He'd be an individual athlete you're working with, but also in a team sport rather than you working on a full team, if that makes sense. Not that you wouldn't be working individually with particular people in a team, but could you talk a little bit about any of the challenges that you would have had with someone like him, trying to marry both the individual athlete nearly mentality, because you're working along with him primarily, and then also how that's integrated into the other teams. Like, were you speaking to his coaches on this, or giving particular recommendations depending on what his schedule was like and so on? Could you talk a little bit about that, Brent?
Yeah, excuse me. I would have never kind of talked to Shane's coaches that much. Any work I would have done with him, I would have always said, like, look, what did you do during the week?
Yeah.
What's your training program? We're not going to change it. We're maybe just going to add one or two small bits. Like, a lot of the kind of work I would do with like the likes of Shane, I would be kind of in his off season or when he doesn't have much contact with maybe
He's pretty close.
He's in Roscommon, the school, you know. So I'd never kind of try to override what anyone else is trying to do with him, you know. It's just maybe add and look at, can we add something a little bit more specific to you, or maybe can we change that exercise to make it a little bit more specific to what you want to do? Like if you're working with an individual athlete from a team setting, you have to account for everything that they're doing external to what you're going to be doing with them, you know, and everything that they're doing in their weekly schedule has to guide you in what you're doing, you know. In the end of the day, as I said, like if you're going to do something that is too much in the whole scheme of their week, and then the possibility they get injured, they're not going to be available.
And so we'll go back a little bit, I suppose, to some of the strength work. And I suppose when you were in Citadel, for example, you had to work with a lot of different sports. And was there particular recommendations from the coaches, or an atmosphere towards simplicity, or towards, okay, do you know what, these are relatively complicated things that we're going to be doing, but that's required for the particular sports? Or was there any particular challenges you found working with such a variety of sports while you were there that that would have helped you with your relationships now with the particular players you would have dealt with, like with the minors, for example, and things like that? Was there a particular orientation for their training over there, or was it very much sport dependent and then individual coach dependent off of that?
Yeah, it was most of the coaches would be kind of working off the same idea, you know. But look, at every team was different. They were all in different types of season. When I was over there, like football were in season, you know, so they were totally different to what wrestling were doing, because they were obviously pre-season.
Yes.
Like I would have done a little bit of of programming for the golf, the ladies' golf team.
Yeah.
That was kind of my team over there. And so like something really interesting, something that I hadn't worked with before. But like some of those, like a lot of them were kind of they were first years or I don't know, freshmen is what you call them or whatever. And like it was kind of back to basics with them. But over there, anytime I went to ask kind of any of the coaches for a bit of advice on maybe what I was doing or what I was going to, what should I program, do you think?
Yeah.
They said, look, you do it and we'll critique it when it's done.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Or we'll not critique it, you know, but maybe give pointers on it. There is massive variability over there, and it's down to, it's like, look at, even in the likes of football or American football or hurling or soccer or whatever, you can give an athlete the tools to do whatever they're trying to do. Two athletes might do the same things totally different.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? No athletes might get from A to B totally different. So you have to give them a toolbox that encompasses a lot of different tools so that they can pick, right, this is my most effective way of getting to here. Rather than saying this is the strict way we do it, you know.
Very much. And did you notice much with the likes of the golf team that you were working with in the States? Your approach wasn't massively different necessarily than with the other teams you would have worked with, I'm assuming necessarily, mainly because of the context of, like, it was still very much depending on the point in their season, really, rather than the actual specific issues that they were would have been dealing with, so to speak.
Like a lot of them were kind of first years. They were relatively new to weight training. Like I'm not sure how it works over there. Like if you're a golfer in high school, I don't know, I'm not sure is women's golf an actual high school sport? But it is an NCAA sanctioned sport. So because of that, because it's an NCAA sanctioned event or sport, they have to do weight training sessions to start with, you know. Now, look, a lot of the uh, a lot of the teams, we were getting them at 6 a.m. in the morning, 5:45, you know, because of the military college, and they had military duties at 7 a.m. every morning. So like a lot of the teams would be coming in at 6 a.m. So look at some of them were kind of...
A bit new to that, very much.
Still waking up and still trying to trying to get out of bed, but and it was the same with all groups. But look, like the stuff we were doing with the women's golf was really, really basic. You know, kind of some anti-rotation stuff, building general strength.
Yeah.
Really, really basic. Like some of them had no lifting experience at all. So, again, we just kind of focused on the basics. You know, I was only working with them for probably 8 weeks. So
okay.
2 hours a week, 8 weeks. You know, you're only going to get one block of a program in. And it was the start. It was kind of the start of their preseason because they were only back in college. It was really, really basic.
Yeah. But, I suppose everybody would have had, and this kind of timing, I suppose this time of the of our lives in the world is it's a worrying time. Everybody's a bit nervous, everybody's a bit anxious, and everybody's a bit more aware of hopefully trying to have a better perspective on life. And obviously we've all had losses over the years, be it team losses and stuff like that, but also personal losses and friends and family and things like that. I suppose when that comes to it, what kind of drives you, Brendan, at the moment? And having had a lot of really interesting experiences over the years, are you very much driven by family? Are you driven by just a thirst for knowledge? Are you a bit, is it a love of the game, or is it just in recognition of people who've gone before? What's your main drivers at the moment? If you could quickly chat about those.
Yeah, like a lot of it would have been kind of thirst for knowledge and love of the game, as you said. Like that would have been kind of a lot of my main driving. And I've been able to work at the elite level at the start. That was kind of my main kind of goal. That's what I thrived for, you know, and getting the experience in America. Like, you know, like starting college in 2012, I never thought that would have been something that, you know, that was so far away at the time. That's kind of where I was working towards. And even remember starting college in 2012 and saying, geez, I'd love to work with like an intercounty team, senior intercounty team, you know. And I got 2 years of assistant with those, you know. But like love of the game still is a driving factor. Personal knowledge is definitely still a massive driving factor. But like look at with everything that's going on at the moment and this whole kind of COVID-19 coronavirus, it really does change your perspective, but it makes you realise that there's a lot more
going on
than just, you know, than putting all your life into sport. Like as a coach, I think I remember last year, like between the minors, the seniors, and the club team, and trying to build our kind of online coaching business. Like I have no life outside of sport, you know. And even last year, there was a really good friend of mine that I lived with in college. He kind of he passed away last May. And like I tried to meet him a few times, you know, coming up to that after Christmas before he passed away, and kind of work and being so heavily invested in sport I didn't get the opportunity to meet up with him, you know. So like when that happened, it really kind of makes you realize that even though it's a great, like you have to have a love for the game,
absolutely,
be involved in strength and conditioning and coaching. You know, you have to have a love for making people better, or a want to make people better, you know, or help improve, or provide information that or give them the tools to help them perform better. But I think you have to live your own life outside of it as well, you know, and you have to think of the bigger picture of where am I going to be in 20 years time. Like, you know, in 20 years time, do I want to say I didn't get to meet people that are now gone? I didn't get to spend time with brothers, sisters, family members, you know, and I spent all my time in sport. Like, you know, that's as much as I love strength and conditioning, that's my kind of main love. I definitely think that there's a lot more stuff that comes ahead of that, you know.
Yeah, very much. So, I think I completely agree. I mean, I suppose this kind of timing, it's so strange for all of us, and everybody who would have thought that I suppose you're we. It's a weird one because you feel like, okay, I should distract myself and start doing lots of other things, you know. And even in your situation there, there could have been easily a difficult situation where you would have jumped even harder into work when your friend passed away, and it made it more of a spiraling situation. But I think it's having a level headedness about it and going, okay, look, do you know what? That won't happen again, or it potentially will, but you're going to try and mitigate as much as possible the chances of that happening, and really have I wouldn't be the greatest fan of balance, the word, but I'm becoming more and more of a fan of it because they have no choice in it. It's very important, and the yin and yang of especially as coaches, I think we always like to be on, and we like to kind of stay on a little bit simmering if we can. We're always like, yeah, a little bit here and there, and we're watching off the ball, or we're kind of, you know, watching bits and pieces, and we're reading some stuff, and I have more flipping PDFs than I have since, you know, downloaded on my phone. I'm like, I'm not going to fucking read half of the blasted things. So we can get wrapped up really badly in that. But yeah, exactly like you said, once you start getting into an awareness of this kind of a situation, your family becomes inevitably much more important than any amount of sport or activities you'd be looking at. And it definitely gives you a better perspective on, okay, look, do you know what? We only get one of these. We may as well give it a good fucking blast and get at it, you know.
Yeah, I think that balance is important. Like, as you said, balance is maybe not a word to best describe it, but it is important that, like, even after a loss like that, or kind of after you know, this whole kind of pandemic, would we call it, that's going on at the moment, that, like, sport will
resume,
bring a lot of people back together.
Very much.
I met so much good relationships through sport, you know, like that friend of mine that passed away, like, only for doing this course and getting into this field, I'd have never met him, you know.
Yeah.
So sport is important, but look, you have to have the best of, you know, the best of both worlds.
Exactly, yeah. Brendan, have you any, so I don't know whether you're a big, we're gonna leave you to it now, dude. We have to get back to our very busy schedules right now. are you much of a reader, or are you more of a podcast head, or what's the story? Have you any particular recommendations for us with a bit of downtime now? Any old videos we need to watch, or Netflix documentaries or anything like that that you're a fan of these days?
Yeah, look at Netflix, it's a funny one, you know. I kind of tried the whole vegan approach there after the
Nice.
Just for a while, it didn't last too long. I think, like, a lot of that stuff will have its own bias, you know. Like, those that can be game changers and whatnot. That whole vegan thing, even though this, like, you know, dairy, a lot of our research on dairy is supported by the Dairy Council, a lot of stuff about veganism is supported by those kind of groups as well. So, you have to kind of look in from the outside on that kind of stuff. Like, look, the stuff, guys, I would have followed that would have, I'd face a lot of my coaching off. Like, one of them is definitely Care. Care, rugby strength coach, Care with a flat. He is Strength Coach Network. There's so much good stuff up there, you know. I think it's about $1 a day or something, you know.
Yeah, really.
It's not, I buy coffee every day, that's €2.50, you know.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's massive. Like, as I said, like, a lot of my conditioning stuff, a lot of the speed stuff that I would coach, a lot of it would be kind of based on his knowledge. Who else? There's a new kind of thing that I'm starting to look into now, and it's breathing and PRI, posture restoration.
Yeah.
That's something that I'm starting to look into. There's a really good guy on Instagram, David Gray Rehab. I'm still kind of really, really new to it. But I started using it, and stuff, methods that I've been using for years.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see a lot more benefit out of the likes of breathing, core contractions, working a lot of that kind of stuff, you know. So through my knowledge from David Gray and watching his stuff on Instagram. So
nice. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's savage. So, Brent, we're gonna leave you to it, dude. I think people will get a lot out of it. I think I've always had a great time for you as a coach and as a friend. So I hope you you want to go on to really, really good things. You've done great work before with the different teams and athletes that you've worked with. You were great working with us at the time, and hopefully we'll be all relatively safe, and we'll get out of this all unscathed, and then we can get back to reality and back to sport fairly soon. But for now, thanks a million for joining me, and I hope you have a good day, dude.
Good. It was great to be on the show. Thanks for asking me on. It's something new that I haven't done podcasts, so unknown ground, but it was great to have a chat. And,
super.
And hopefully someone takes something from it, you know.
Nice. All right. Thanks a million, Brett. Super.
All right, folks. So you've just been listening to episode number 54 of the Humble Coach Podcast. With a massive thank you to my guest Brendan for joining me. Thanks a million, dude. It was an excellent chat, and it's one of those ones where, in the times that we live in, folks, I think it's good to get back in touch with people that you haven't seen in a long time and haven't chatted to, and that you had a great respect for. And Brendan would be one of those people that I would have great respect for. So hope you have a good day, dude, and thanks for joining me. So folks, if you want to check out any other episodes on the Humble Coach Podcast, pretty much wherever you can get your podcasts, that's where we're at. iTunes, Podbean is our main home base, Spotify, the whole whack. So if you'd like to check out any of the other ones there, give them a good look, and put the coffee on and get stuck in. But for the moment, folks, stay safe, and I'll chat to you very soon. Bye-bye.